no me dan de beber, lloro si no me dan de beber, lloro si no me dan de beber, lloro si no me dan de beber.
Topic of the week, Olympics, Bacchanalia, Saturnalia. The 2024 Paris Olympics came and went, uninterrupted by several counts of sabotage by various actors. There's been a diversity of complaints about its content, costs, and impacts. It's one more example of bread and circus that puts nationalism on steroids, which, like beauty pageants, reinforces the outlines of national and gender identities, and bolsters jingoism. In another instance of war by other means, nation-states are pitted against each other. The Apollonian millimetric measurement of performance and the eugenic scrutiny of athletes at the microscopic level predominates over the Dionysian bacchanal of athletes from all over fucking, an imaginary which scandalizes the public as made-up rumors about cardboard beds meant to dissuade sex and condoms running out become popular. Beyond the backstage enjoyment of Bacchanal, it is mere portrayal on stage that was also the subject of controversy. Oh, its mere portrayal on stage was the subject of controversy. I think referring to the Greek pantheon scene in the opening ceremony that people were freaking out about. Let's consider concerns over the Olympics budget being an excessive expenditure on non-essential luxury at the taxpayer's expense. In contrast with support for funding anti-immigration policies, police, and military budgets. And then in quotes, according to Bataille's theory of consumption, the accursed share is that excessive and non-recuperable part of any economy which must either be spent luxuriously and knowingly in the arts, in non-procreative sexuality, in spectacles and sumptuous moments, or it is obvious or obliviously destined to an outrageous and catastrophic outpouring. In the contemporary age, most often in war, or in former ages as destructive and ruinous acts of giving or sacrifice, but always in a manner that threatens the prevailing system. In principle, anarchists are opposed to states and governing bodies of all sorts, and they don't need a committee to regulate the throwing of a ball or the jumping of hurdles. But, at least in principle, they aren't opposed to sports or disruptive, sumptuous celebrations. Oh man, there's like two more paragraphs. In its day, Bacchanalia came to be seen as a scandalous threat, so it was reformed and controlled. During the festivities of Saturnalia, there was also a temporary overturning of norms. Masters provided the table service for their slaves, and it was seen as a time of liberty for both slave and free man alike. It also influenced what came to be the Christmas tradition, like the appointing of a lord of misrule or abbot of unreason, now a custom in decline, since it was abolished as it was deemed disruptive. Many of the customs regarding the lord of misrule have been incorporated into modern-day Carnival and Mardi Gras celebrations. What are the differences between games and festivities that the state views as a threat and those that are state-sanctioned? What are the merits of disrupting latter versus partaking in them in ways that turns them disruptive? How were once disruptive festivities recuperated? And what would ontologically anarchist Olympics, Bacchanal, and Saturnalia be like? What are collective and individual ways to expend the accursed share anarchically? Hi, all. It's Vale.
Hi.
I am here with Petra and Larkspur. Once again, hey. Returning champs back at it.
Right back from the Bacchanal of the Food Not Bombs potluck, where we played anarchic Olympic games, like how far can you throw that jug of urine at a cop car, and I don't know what else dodge do we have ball. I mean, that'd be like dodgeball,
the cheerleading.
I like the anarchist cheerleading was there's
I don't think so.
No, I'm shocked. The 20 meter fallout post.
All right, we're talking Olympics.
That we are. We're talking
Olympics. We're talking Saturnalia?
Yes.
That's good.
That's a thing we enjoy.
That's a thing we like to talk about. We're going to say the word ontologically.
Mm-hmm. We might even get a little freaky and talk about monasteries in this one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do have some stuff about asceticism. Yeah. So,
I'm drinking a heady Trappist ale right now.
Yep.
You trapping?
That's how I'm trying. Let's see. Where to begin?
I
mean, I guess, yeah. What are the differences between games and festivities that the state views as a threat and those that are state-sanctioned?
I mean,
games is hard to kind of say because, like, I think the state doesn't really find a lot of games to be viewed as a threat unless it's, like, until it's something that, like, proves that it can't be recuperated or otherwise.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, there's my immediate thought with that, with games that are seen as a threat, is I maybe coming from recent experience, getting trapped on a major road and having to turn back around is sideshows, right? Mm-hmm. Which some of our comrades are sort of obsessed with the aesthetic of, mm-hmm. Which always feels a little off to me. But I also do see something really kind of liberatory and exciting about them, as much as I do kind of want to get out of the area as soon as they begin personally, because I have a night I would like to go about, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you have, like, other plans.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's these kind of, like, what kind of unsanctioned uses of space and that kind of way that, like, doesn't necessarily, like, involve the opportunity for being capitalized upon, I think.
Right.
I think so many activities can, like, kind of fall into that, and it's easy to see why they're, like, kind of viewed as, like, disruptive or stuff like that. And it doesn't even need to be, like, super showy things or stuff, like, or, like, flashy or even competitive. I mean, it's a big part of the reason why I think, like, you know, a lot of Food Not Bombs stuff gets a little repressed. Not even though that, like, Food Not Bombs is exactly, like, festive. I mean, there certainly are more, you know, red wallish feast moments of a Food Not Bombs, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But, like, they kind of do their own thing as, like, a kind of commitment to, like, some form of, like, service or duty, I guess, maybe on some level these days. But, like, just that kind of, like, seizure of space and, like, the performance of an activity that one might normally be considered work, or the idea that it, like, is something that would be done normally in a kind of economic transaction being done as a form of, like, play or, like, I guess what, but wouldn't it be called, like, ludic activity or something?
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of threatening to that base of, like, oh, I mean, well, if people realize that people do this for free out of, like, not necessarily altruism, but out of, like, a joyfulness in doing something.
Yeah, not a revolting desire, right?
Yeah.
Because the thing is with, like, with chrysanthemums, right? Mm. With resentment, it's, like, the idea is sort of that to escape that negative view of self, self-surveillance, self-hatred, that you can either enter into a sort of ascetic lifestyle, right, where you're judging others through a view of yourself as completely contained, right? Or you can revolt. You can become some sort of, like, a heroic self revealed from that in the way that the ruling class are, right?
Right, yeah.
So we see sort of moments of that with festivals or games. What I immediately think of is football hooliganism.
Mm-hmm.
Which contains this sort of kind of stupid nationalistic trappings.
Sometimes. I mean, there's also, like, sometimes. A kind of inter...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's, like, inter... Like, kind of... It's territorial. It's tribal on some level.
It's tribal. I mean, it makes us think immediately, or it makes us being
tribal,
the three of us,
yeah,
think about clastras, right? Mm-hmm. Think about the idea of warfare as play, as joyous.
Yeah.
And that kind of tribal conflict is not necessarily being this sort of exterminating impulse, but a sort of back and forth, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of idea that it's, like, sort of, like, in group sanctioned acts of violence and extremity towards each other that, like, have a limit that one should not transgress typically.
Yeah.
But
typically.
Typically, yeah, most people aren't, like, I mean, for a while, they weren't, the goal was not to, like, kill each other. It was just to have a fight and stuff. And
yeah. Yeah. I mean, as I understand it, there did become overarching sort of codified political conflict between clubs, right? And I think there were assassinations associated with it.
Yeah, there are. And, you know, it's either politically or between, like, clubs that are functioning on an apolitical level, like, but just have, like, long-running feud between them.
Right.
That, you know, is, like, a series of, like, reprisals and, like, insults and stuff. But yeah, it is like kind of like ludic warfare on some level too. I mean, it's like kind of like brainless and often like kind of, it's more the accursed share. It's a weird kind of like play of that accursed share and stuff, and that it's not necessarily like this kind of expenditure on like, you know, something like sumptuous and stuff as it is like the spectacle of like kind of like ritualistic
hyper violence
violence and stuff that's like done as an expression of like excess towards, you know, basically being this like kind of like performance of warfare that people are like taking on as like this excess or something. I don't know, I haven't read the accursed
exactly. Well, it's it's a break in normalcy, right? It's, and in that sense there's something Saturnalian in it, in the fact that it's somewhat confined, that there's an expected level of violence, that it's occurring within the space, and there's this sort of, not to say libidinal, but this of like brimming threat of it reaching past the confines of what's expected and what's mediated, right? And there's this extreme beauty in just beautiful bodies clashing, right? Yes. Blood, valor, right?
Oh my God.
Sorry. Getting a little too excited.
Oh, wow. You referenced Leotard. Should we throw a party? Should we invite Catherine Malibu? should we have an episode of Acid Horizon about it?
That's
right. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. We're coming after your asses.
They're catching strays.
Yeah. Damn. But yeah. I mean, like this sort of thing, like the kind of reclamation of like, you know, festivity and stuff. I mean, there's something too that's like talked about, like what is specifically, is it the festival, like the Jubilee, like the ruling class deciding to basically settle debts, like ritualistically, as like kind of a recuperative measure within like Saturnalian kind of celebration.
Yeah.
As like kind of a pressure release valve that like settles debts and like lets people free from the yoke of like control, seemingly, like, but it's basically a way of like managing this. It's like kind of a very early kind of example of recuperation and stuff that can exist in these kind of pre-capitalist like upheavals within like class struggle or something, or like class conflict, rather, not class struggle necessarily. But yeah, I think we've often spoken of a desire for something like this, like anarchic seizure of space that like asserts these like kind of joyous rituals and like performs activities of like necessity and stuff that like most people face, but in like this kind of like ludic form that like shows people like aspiring towards some like greater work or like this like greater project or something that they take on in like service of like simply like kind of pure enjoyment and stuff.
Yes. And stuff.
Yeah, and stuff.
And stuff. So Nietzsche really likes this idea, or really mentions this thing where the Apollonian is more the sphere of dreams, and the Dionysian is the sphere of drunkenness. But I was thinking about these in terms of like how marketing works and how we're sold both ideas in the terms of, in thinking about like how we're marketed a sense of fun and party and excess, and it is both Apollonian, it's controlled, it's drunkenness that doesn't get beyond a certain point, it's you know, you do a line but it isn't too messy, you always look good, and there's such a focus on being beautiful and perfect and a certain type of frailty that is neither Apollonian, because it isn't a sort of building up or a certain, I don't know, it isn't quite dreamlike, but it isn't Dionysian because you're not really letting yourself be an abject body. You're not letting yourself be somebody who gets hungover, who right. is going to be fucking vomiting into the toilet in a few hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're in this perpetual dream state of always being, of always partying. And I'm not sure entirely what I'm referencing, just like the commercial idea of a party scene, but also the way...
I think of Pride immediately, right? That was something I was thinking about in regards to this, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I was thinking of EDM festivals and the way EDM festivals kind of, as this big spectacle, grew, but how I contrast that with the sort of more grungy or smaller underground techno things, which could be like 50 people in a fucking field somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Versus, you know, you're huge, people spend like $1,000 on getting in, you're beautiful, you're on Instagram constantly,
you're glamping,
being viewed. And on some level, that's like the Apollonian, the realm of dreams. You're trying to be this spirit of dreams, but it's also not fully because it's in part because it's always captured by this need to always be seen and be for something else, for someone else's consumption. Right. But that consumption is never fully allowed. People aren't allowed this sort of like cannibalism of like watching beautiful people doing beautiful things and then the aftermath of it.
And then there's that turn though, and the anarchic turn, there's party death, right? Mm. There's, I guess, party monster being a good sort of solidification of that, right? There's this sense of that turning into something just completely fucked,
like when I ate a 150 gram edible gummy at Movement Festival and then had a panic attack in a porta potty for 3 hours.
Yeah, well, or like that Gaspar Noé film.
Climax.
Which one? The one where the weird queer dance party turns into everyone dying tragically, right?
That's Climax. Yeah.
I mean, it isn't always that bad, but I think we all have a party story where it starts out as a certain thing and then it goes weird and tilted. Mm-hmm. But if you have this image of partying, the one that we're sort of sold, it's just the snapshot of it's great, it's great, it's great, and then snap, it's over. But what you don't have is the whole festival aspect where it's great. Right. It gets tilted and completely sideways and fucked, and then it gets great again, but maybe it gets fucked again. Mm-hmm. And that entire, like, I would call, like, that's Bacchanalian. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's part of, too, like, why the, you know, the rave scene found so much resonant with, like, the whole Taz concept and that, like, liminality and that, like, or not liminality, but that, like, impermanence and stuff of it. And
the temporality of it,
Yeah, and, like, how, too, like, you see, like, so much branding going into, like, seemingly, like, the reclamation of, like, the rave or something as this thing that you could be bought or sold and stuff. Like, so like nowadays, like I see the kind of like very conscious branding of things as like rave experiences that can be sold like in the context of club culture. And that is like kind of very different because it's like what you're talking about. It's like that kind of like Apollonian pursuit of this like dream world. And like, it's very managed within like the constructs of like what a venue or something needs to promise people in terms of like safety as like this underlying assumption that like, you know, there's an expectation of like conduct or safety and stuff that is not necessarily like distributed fairly horizontally or whatever, but that is top down and like that makes this somehow different, like that makes that, I would say, like fundamentally different than like the kind of liminal kind of expectation of like the rave as like a space wherein there can be that like ebb and flow of like good vibe, bad vibes sort of things as the night goes up and down and stuff in these kind of like, you know, impermanent spaces and stuff. And like, that's like kind of a whole thing. I mean, obviously people were making, I mean, unless you're talking about like free techno or like open decks things that like people were doing in like LA or something, or like free tech parties. Like, people were making money in these spaces, whether it was illicit economies or bar, like, drinks or...
Well, there's, like...
charging money, which is, like, whatever.
You think the acid house scene was quite like that? Because it's a lot of squatted spaces. I assume people DJing were, but there were protest raves, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the distinction. That's a distinction space. And I think that, like, kind of, you know, I mean, the acid house scene being, like, a party to, like, squatting and stuff at the same time that was also being, like, super popular in, like, Ibiza and stuff is, like, a kind of weird paradox of it, is that...
Right.
That music can soundtrack two different versions of that same space, you know?
Yeah.
Like that music can be soundtracking like a kind of, you know, the tearing up the roads protest rave or something.
Yeah, I was going to mention the jackhammers. That was one thing I had.
Yeah.
Sort of prepared.
Yeah. While it's, but like at the same time, it's also like being the same records are being played in, you know, clubs in like Ibiza or like in, you know, in like fashionable, like kind of London and New York clubs and stuff as like part of this very exclusive sort of like party scene that's like very pay to play sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, what does Goa Gill think of all this? We need Goa Gill's tape.
But I think there is the obvious comment on protest as this space where it can be and is often seen by the people who are attending the protest as this spontaneous outpouring and potential for like almost a sort of, oh God. I almost said libidinal.
I think this is every time somebody. Yeah.
But this potential for like airing of anger or rage towards government policy, towards whatever. But then you see, so I'm like looking at this news from the march on the DNC, and they've apparently won the right to erect, the protesters have won a right to erect a soundstage.
Oh, hey, that's cool, man. That's great.
And it's just a stage where they get to stand up there, like, but it's like this thing.
They should get Cheech and Chong to come do that'd be fucking dope.
What?
I don't know. They get Cheech and Chong. I think it'd be fucking cool.
At the DNC.
It'd be cool, man. Sorry.
I think that should be the only real criteria for these things. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, I mean, it'd be cool. Like winning the right to do anything and stuff is like very Apollonian, very like.
Very much so.
Yeah.
The permit, right? Well, and that's the thing, like, we've seen so many waves of that where there's the initial riot, right? The response to the event that is legitimately anarchic, followed by just an endless series of permitted marches that do feel very full of a certain type of resentment, right?
Mm-hmm.
While you're shopping, bombs are dropping. Damn. I mean...
Holy shit.
What are we saying when this is the chant, when this is such a popular chant? It's not necessarily, like, there's some...
It's like a personal castigation, is that the word?
Chastisement.
Castigation.
Not in the sexy way.
Castigation, there we go.
Castigation. No age. Oh,
we're learning words here.
Next, ontology.
Okay, so I think we've kind of mapped out the whole like kind of Bacchanal Saturnalia sort of idea. Mm-hmm. Do we want to apply it to Olympics specifically? Because the Olympics are, I think it is fairly accurate.
I wanted to talk about serial killers, but
no, what? No.
Actually, why not? Go for it.
What about
serial killers?
Yeah,
I have a whole thing on Michael Bernstein's Bitter Carnival prepared. Let me go.
Go for it. Go off.
The Dark Carnival.
I don't know who that. Wait, who is that? First of all,
Michael Bernstein is a theorist. He wrote a very good book called Bitter Carnival: Resentment and the Abject Hero. I recommend it very, very highly. And so he traces this figure of the abject hero. A lot of it is about Saturnalia, But, you know, he talks a bit about there's these various figures we see, right? There's the allowed fool that is sort of like an Alex Jonesy type, someone who's allowed to move through space and do this sort of like comically stupid pseudo-criticism because they just sort of detract from any real criticism, right? There's the malcontent who is just essentially a professional critic. But there's these people who break through. And in the introduction, which is very, very good, called Murder and the Utopian Moment. That's the title of the introduction to this book. Always, if you read something like that, it's bound to be good, right? He discusses a moment of terror he experienced when he realized that he knew one of the victims of Ira Einhorn. People who aren't familiar, Einhorn was a hippie, a prankster, and a serial killer, right? Programmed to Chill actually has a great series on him, weirdly, because of course he's spooked up as anyone like that would be.
Right.
So you see these individual figures that Celine is one he refers to, the author. That
yeah, I think you, I think that's what I remember you telling me about this from, is that like, especially like the Journey in the Night.
And Celine is someone who becomes, like, Celine is someone who is so anti-Semitic, the Vichy government told him to stop publishing his pamphlets.
Right.
He reached a level of complete lack of good taste that reached beyond that which even a Nazi regime could tolerate. Right. And there's something transcendent about his work as such. I'm not saying that to co-sign his beliefs there, obviously, but that's something many intellectuals feel. He is titan of publishing, right, of writing. But there's something really interesting to me here, that there is this figure who is the sort of absolute anarchist who just completely destroys all, who is evil, is recognizably evil, and in many ways is most likely our enemy, right? Most likely our political enemy, like Charles Manson. Obviously, we don't want to erect a sort of like racialist utopia, right? Like, but in talking about people who break out of the confines of the sort of allowed transgression and become heroic as such, heroic removed from any sort of ethical association. Right.
Like an amoral kind of like heroism and like an amoral.
An abject heroism.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So that's my bit on serial killers.
Thank you.
Now let's talk about the Olympics.
How does one bring like Bacchanal to what I think is like pretty accurately described in some ways in this topic as like a fairly Apollonian exercise of like the achievement of like human perfection and stuff, and like the heights of like this like attainable like human vitality or like performance of like what the human physical form is like capable of and stuff. How does one kind of bring that kind of thing into like a kind of Bacchanalian sphere and stuff?
I almost want to say that some of these athletes are so good at what they do that it causes a certain amount of, I'm not going to say resentment, that it's almost troubling. I'm completely, for not to me, but to the wider culture. And I'm saying this because there was all of that absolutely like foul discourse around that
the breakdancer,
the Algerian I don't remember the breakdancer. I'm thinking of that Algerian boxer. But yeah, breakdancing is the key to uniting the Apollonian and Dionysian impulses, and I think we should read their dissertation.
Oh, it's on Acid Horizon, this one.
It's rhizomatic. I'm just gonna say
Just type it into LibGen, you'll get it immediately.
Okay, but restarting. I think that there is something somewhat troubling to the sort of current untroubled cultural zeitgeist, or whatever you want to call it, about the degree to which these athletes push themselves. And I am thinking of the Algerian boxer and how much like her performance upset people who had a very strong stake in traditional ideas of womanhood as frailty, as being fragile, unable to cause harm. Mm. Unable to take or give, I think even just being able to punch was so distressing to their idea of womanhood, or mm-hmm. woman is this fragile, victimized thing, mm-hmm. that, you know, they started that discourse. So, but right. on a certain level, like, is somebody like Michael Phelps, who has longer torso than normal and like some sort of genetic mutation or
different
that allows him to not make as much lactic acid, so he doesn't feel his muscles burn the way we do.
Right. Right. And hyperathleticism is its own sort of deformity, right?
Yeah.
Like you see it really intensely with runners, especially. Like, their physique is totally fucked, but it's like towards a very certain type of performance.
Right. A swimmer's body is just a little, like, somebody who dedicates themselves to that or to various other sports, like, there is a level of alteration that you're making to your body that I think is, in its own way, a sort of switch back to the Dionysian, to the almost like to the Satyr, in this idea of being a very human and just a very an expression of a desire, and not fuck necessarily, but to swim or do whatever other sport you are.
Yeah, and to kind of reject the potential of the human, right? There's a sort of transference.
Or embraces it so highly that it no longer is marketable as, like, a beautiful athlete, as, like, many athletes are beautiful, but into something that's almost freakish and, I don't know, I'm thinking about the Space Marines from Warhammer 40,000, all things.
For me, the thing, and my thought about the Olympic stuff is initially very, very obvious, but it's that the sort of dichotomy between the contemporary Olympics and the Olympics of antiquity, right, with the complete disappearance of mythology and the replacement of it with this just completely kind of empty commercialism, and this sort of like very loud transgression where you just have the most sort of like limp metal music you possibly can being performed in like a sort of fake French Revolution setting, right? Or the notorious LGBT performance, right? We're just kind of like, what is this? The Last Supper, right?
Well, it wasn't the Last Supper, right? Isn't that the whole issue? It wasn't meant to be the Last Supper.
But yeah, you have like the, what is it, like the meter being Hercules' breath, that distance, right? Looking up at Kronos' mountains, you have this like sense of it in antiquity as this extremely, extremely powerful like merging of humanity and the mythical. Not to sound too fucking gods and radicals here. I'm not besmirch them, but I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the pagan anarchist tendency. It's something I find a little
where do your ancestors hail from?
Yes, very much so.
I hail your ancestors.
I think my interactions with contemporary neo-pagans is a lot more limp-wristed. It's more of radical fairy reclaiming types who are their own kind of extreme cringe, and I feel a desire to interact with as little as possible. No. I like some of them. I'm walking that claim back. Some of the ones I interacted with, I did not like, and I do not consider myself among them. But also, like, this kind of gets to all of this, like the party stuff too. It's like I'm straight edge. I'm vegan. I don't like to leave my house very much. I'm maybe not the person to talk about a lot of this.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering, like, what would an anarchic Olympiad kind of look like? When you think of, like, the athlete or something as, like, when you think, too, of, like, these kind of athletes as, like, people, maybe not, like, you're not, like, workers in the very strict sense of, like, work. Not to, like, ground all this in, like, work. But if we're looking at, like, an anarchic Olympics as, like, something that is more necessarily, like, play and a reclamation of one's activity outside of the drudgery of, like, work or, like, the sale of one's life to these kind of, like, causes. I mean, we have to, like, look at, like, a kind of activity of amateurs and stuff like that. And we have to like kind of understand like this pursuit of activity as like something that would necessarily be like a ludic activity. So like I don't think any of the Olympic events are things that could not be beyond like the limits of like the infrastructure needed to take them on and stuff. Like like an Olympic, an anarchist Olympics, if we're going to do like real like world building and stuff, yeah, it probably wouldn't look anything like what we kind of conceive of as the Olympics now, not even in terms of like nationality and stuff, but of like the kind of sheer amount of infrastructure that's needed to like achieve this. Yeah, but
there could be like an archery bolo, mm-hmm. right? Uh-huh. And the bolos could get together. There could be an events bolo.
Yeah. I mean, my thought is that it would probably be something that looks more like, yeah, general feats of like sport and storytelling and like the arts. And it'd be probably something more
interpretive dance in the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like,
puppetry.
Yeah, oral tradition. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Feats of aerial acrobatics and flexibility.
What I think I would be really into seeing is just like twisted metal destruction derby.
I think actually like hacked together, like if there was like an anarcho wacky races, that would be fun.
Yeah, with survival research labs meets.
Yeah, survival research labs would be fucking amazing.
Well, that actually is weirdly a good example of that kind of just like extreme level of concentrated activity that is necessarily kind of illegal. I mean, they pull permits for stuff sometimes, but then they just fuck with like what they're actually doing, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and then in that sense, there's sort of, because there's also the issue of rules, mm-hmm. right? Steroids has been a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what does it mean to encourage modification?
Mm-hmm. We should have, it should be all those like Ripley's Believe It or Not guys that like tried to become cats and lizards. Right. Like,
yeah.
Not like furries, but the guys who did like the extreme body mod to look like cats.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
Have them compete in something or just
They should be like a physique contest of that sort of thing. Yeah.
I think the lizard man's in pretty good shape. I saw his Instagram recently. He's like active.
Oh, good.
It's always interesting to see him pop up in like old school body mod, like archival stuff, mm-hmm. and see him before he was like fully lizard manned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, suspension.
I mean, suspension, right? That would be cool. Yeah, I mean, I think the field would widen definitely as far as like what anarchist activity would be. I mean, I think also like a kind of, you know, the kind of activity of like doing the acts of the infrastructure itself being something that like one could like have these kind of friendly competitions on, like if like mess crews taking every night as like a way to like kind of compete to like feed the most amount of people the best amount of food or like the best food and stuff. Like there's that whole thing that I think it was like some of the Inhabit associated people just did, or I think are doing coming up, that like deep food thing where it talks about like feeding movements and stuff. It's like a camp or like a kind of like, not camp, but like a kind of like a almost like a convergence that they're doing.
That's like camp communism or whatever it was they were doing.
I think so. It seems like it's like, yeah, kind of a convergence that specifically is like about a skill sharing of like feeding mass gatherings and stuff. Like building those skills and stuff, but that kind of like, I don't know, that kind of like displays of like hospitality of like different crews like coming together to put on like the greatest kind of like feast and like bacchanal together, and like it being like ranked through like a kind of like horizontal decision making. It's something I was like daydreaming about today, is like, oh, imagine these like big tents of like, yeah, the anarchist vaudevillians and puppets and stuff.
We started talking about the idea of like competing to provide a very sumptuous and luxurious meal, like a potluck, to the most amount of people, and how that could be a sort of realm of anarchist competition, which I feel like could actually be applied now. And I wonder if we ever want to sort of touch on this. We've sometimes commented on the difference between what actually is mutual aid and what's mutual aid that's sort of masquerading as charity, or rather that charity masquerading as mutual aid, where you're giving something to people because you're doing mutual aid. But the idea of it being an overflow, expenditure of energy that you're doing because it's enjoyable, not because you need to feed your unhoused homies. And I mean, right. There's nothing wrong with that, but absolutely no shade to Food Not Bombs, but extending the territory of the Food Not Bombs potluck is somehow now, like, if we wanted to take some small step towards an anarchist Olympics, maybe that's where you start.
Yeah. One thing I've been thinking of is this kind of idea of, like, I was like brainstorming this idea of, you know, like, what if this kind of anarchist Olympiad or something that wouldn't necessarily look like it was this, you know, all these like kind of crews of people and like networks and informalities of like people kind of converging to like erect these big kind of, what, like tents or something, almost like these kind of like grand sort of tents or camps or structures wherein they host like these, they host other networks of people, either one-on-one or like in like a larger convergence through like kind of regions or something. And, you know, it's accompanied by like these like acts of like hospitality, like these like feedings of people and this kind of like mass feast and stuff and like storytellings and performance and puppetry, if you want to get into like specifics, or theater, physical feats, demonstrations, stuff like that. I know this is like more in like a kind of like arts kind of driven thing, but like as like part or accompaniment to maybe more traditional kind of like physical feats, like, you know, I mean, it sounds like recently, like around some things, there's been like anarchist, like mixed martial arts meetups and like informal kind of like fight sort of things happening alongside like some meetups or, which sounds cool, like that sort of thing, extended into other physical things like bike rallies or like bike races, alley cats sort of stuff, or, you know, like various like physical things, marksmanship, archery, stuff like that, that, would be accompanied by these like kind of multi-day like feasts and performances that go all night and like are a sign of like, you know, which crew can gain the rep for the best hospitality and stuff and the best kind of like artistic presentation of, I guess, curating a vibe and stuff, if one has to say that, that would be like kind of this bacchanalia that like people participate in, and how that can like kind of be reflected out of the skills that exist as it is in the movement right now. That could be like a vision of like a kind of Olympiad sort of thing, or maybe not in that name and stuff, but this kind of like ways that anarchists come together and like perform like actual activity of like these like feasting and like mutual aid through like this kind of like sharing of skills and resources and stuff solely for the kind of enjoyment and like mutual kind of like association of each other and stuff in this context, as like kind of this performance of like building like network strength and stuff like that, or like not even necessarily like strength, but just like kind of, I don't know, interconnectedness that people can have like a stake in as like a form of play and like something that doesn't entirely center itself around like convergences related to struggle, but convergences related to like, I guess, general like play and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
All right. Well, cool. Have a good one,
thank y'all. You.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.